can't have a Bruno. Don't have a Bruno. Because you want to be started something. Got to be started something.
It's good, right, Michael Jackson?
That's all like Michael Jackson. That's excellent.
All right, that brings us in.
This is Petey Pidge. I am Mike.
J-Mac.
Brutal Dudes.
And we have a very special guest. Please introduce yourself.
Hey, it's Diane Franklin. And I am so happy to be on the Brutal Juice podcast.
We're extremely happy to have you. Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure is one of my favorite movies of all time. And I'm not exaggerating. I love that movie. I taped it off of TBS and watched it on VHS tape for years because I love it so much.
Most triumphant, most excellent of you. You are non-bogus.
Awesome. I was going to name my first band Socrates Johnson because that's what he says when he's introducing the guys, because I thought that was the best line in the entire movie. I love it. Oh,
so yeah, it was really smart. You know, the writers are like, I mean, that was basically them, you know, in college. So it was great. Like, it's just great. You just want to get to know those guys, you know, Bill and Ted.
Yeah.
I was really fortunate when I did it because it was at the beginning of Keanu's career. And also, you know, Alex was, I don't know if Alex had done work before. But it was like early in everyone's career. And so we all were just like having fun. And that character, that the characters they both play are so likable and so funny. And like, you know, it's like Spicoli from, you know, like a bit like, you know, Fast Times. And that character wasn't around. And then the fact that they brought it again and you just wanted to, you want to be their best friend. You know, they're just really cool.
Is that how they are like as people too?
Well, when we were working, they were. And what happened was while we were working, Alex and Keanu kind of, they didn't act their character when they stopped acting, but they kind of had that feeling. They were lighter. They were upbeat. You know, I wasn't getting, more the characters that they created later on in life, you know, more serious. John Wick?
John Wick.
You
know,
like, yeah.
Yeah, right? Like, I wasn't getting that vibe. I was getting the upbeat fun and very, like, very respectful. I remember Keanu was like, nice to meet you. And like, you know, he put his hand out to shake my hand when he met me. And just like, I think it was the same feeling of like trying to be respectful, just like Ted, you know?
Yeah.
Which was funny. And the crazy thing about that film was that we went to so many different locations. Like, okay, I played Princess Elizabeth and Kimberly Cates played Princess Joanna. And when we got the scripts, we knew that that was the case. Although when the movies came out, somebody got the credits wrong. So everyone thought I was Princess Joanna for whatever reason. Anyway, let's get back to the story. So when we met them, we met when our first, I think, thing we shot was in Arizona, I think. Was it in Arizona? I feel like it was. Because we went to the prom with the guys. They asked us to the San Dimas prom. And so the movie was supposed to end with all of us going to the prom. And we were supposed to be the king and queen of San Dimas, you know, graduating as San Dimas prom king and prom queens, kings and queens. So they shot it and Rufus was there and they had the phone booth and they had the same idea. The phone booth came, he brought us, we joined them in the prom kind of situation and we went to the San Dimas prom together and that was it. And we were crowned king and queen. But the ending was not powerful enough, I think, for when they showed it to the audiences. I think they just decided that they wanted us to be in the band. But I think then after that, then we went to Rome and we shot all the castle scenes, which looked like England in Rome. So when we shot the last scene of the movie, we had to go to, it was like in the Pacific Palisades in a garage in someone's house.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
So it was just like, we had to travel. We had to like do a lot of traveling, But I didn't go with them in the core group. And that's the only thing I regret. I really wish that I had, that the princesses joined them in the mall, you know, and in all those scenes. That would have been so fun. But I, so I missed those, that core like bonding that they all, those guys did.
So the scenes that took place like in Rome and like those like ancient, that wasn't a soundstage. That was actual like on location.
That was actually Rome. Like, well, it was supposed to take place in England, but they got a castle in Rome. And they flew the other princess and I to Rome with Keanu and Alex, and they had an Italian crew, and they had the other actors there too. So Socrates and Billy the Kid, and they had all of them, but I never actually met like Socrates and Billy the Kid and Joan of Arc and Genghis Khan when they were shooting it. Because we shot on different days. After they shot with us, we left and they kept shooting. So it was a shame because I wish I could have met the people. To this day, I haven't met Jane Wiedlin. I would love to meet her. Like all the cast, it would be super fun. The only person that I have met and I became friends with is Missy, Amy Stock.
Oh, yeah.
Stock, right? Stock?
Yep.
So Amy and I are actual friends, and I was gonna actually see her this weekend, but I wasn't feeling so well, so I was like, oh my gosh, it just didn't work out. So but we're friends. So from that film, I still see Alex Winters, I see Kimberly Cates, Amy I'm still friends with, and but those are the people that I kind of worked with. And I mean, you know, Rufus, George Carlin, he passed away, but he was a lovely guy. He was such a nice guy. You would not even, I remember seeing him on stage and doing his, what is it? The seven bad words.
Seven dirty, yeah.
Dirty words. Like, I was like, I mean, he is amazing, you know? But I think part of that is because when he is on stage, he took on that persona part of himself. And when he's not on stage, it's like he doesn't have to, it's not his work. You know, so he's just very nice, and he is so well spoken and so genteel is the word that I have to use.
It's funny. It was always funny to me because he would do like a role like Rufus, or he would do like, he was on Shining Time Station too, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was Mr. Conductor. He was Mr. Conductor on Shining Time Station.
On like the kids show. And then you would watch his stand up, and this isn't meant to diss his stand up at all. It's so poignant and it's so good. And just, it's so intelligent. Like, I watch him and I watch Dave Chappelle, and I compare them a lot because they're both so intelligent when they do comedy.
So smart. Yeah. But no, like, you're right. You know, I think what's really interesting about comedians, my daughter's a comedian. Oh. And okay, so there's the stand-up comedian, and then there's my daughter does like comedy sketches. Her name's Olivia De Laurentiis. She's with her comedy partner called Sid and Olivia, and they are on TikTok. So if you're on TikTok,
Dino? Dino De Laurentiis?
Distantly. My husband's distantly related.
Okay.
So my daughter, she does comedy, but the thing that's fascinating to me about it is, you know, when you, comedians get to speak the truth, but they do it in a way that they're not fighting. They're not, I mean, they're kind of using their comedy as a place to voice their unhappiness with things, right? And the reason why, and people love that because, you know, the actor and the writer and the comedians, they all perform or say things that people are sometimes too afraid to say or uncomfortable to say. So when you listen to and you hear it, you just so bond. You go, like with George Carlin, he would say things and you'd be like, yes, that's exactly how I feel, but I couldn't find the right words, or I couldn't find it, I couldn't say it in an ironic or funny way. So comedians are necessary to our society. We need them so badly, because without them, I don't think anybody could, no one would say what was really happening.
Well, that too. And I think we have to be very careful too, as a society, to not censor comedians all. I think that they should
you
be,
can't.
I think there's a difference between good taste and bad taste. But at the same time, like, somebody has to be able to test those lines, because if you don't, you're just going to be stuck in the same circle over and over and over. And it's like, if you can't step out of those boundaries, like another comedian who I really loved, who just is so smart. If you watch his stuff, is Patrice O'Neill, and he got shut down. He's from Philly. He was from Philly, right? I think he was, but he was very outspoken, and he very much he got a lot of flack because he went, he would make jokes about things that like he made, right. He made a joke about rape. He made a
right,
rape joke.
Right, right, and right. It becomes, well, now this is another aspect of what's going on in the world, because a lot of comedy writers, a lot of comedy people are finding it like, you can't say anything now because everything is not PC. Right? Like what makes it funny is sometimes picking something horrible and turning it all the way upside down, you know? So the comic, like, it's just interesting. I've heard a lot of comedians say that they find it really hard because it's like, can you say anything, you know? But I think, you know, first of all, I do think that freedom of speech is important. And I think that obviously don't listen to those who don't, you know, if you don't like it, don't listen to it, you know? But the other part of it is that, you know, most of the times with comedians, I don't find them, we're kind of all in a way the same people. We want to be accepted. We all want to be, we all want to be loved from wherever we're coming from. And so the people who do that, like, they know they're saying something harsh. But a lot of them are just, you know, they're just normal people and they want to be accepted. When they get like, you know, if they say something and people come down and well, yeah, it hurts them. You know, comedians get their feelings hurt way heavy. You know, they're not made of stone. And I think, you know, it's just remember that's their job. You know, it's kind of their job.
It's that idea that it's like, if you're going to be up there and you're going to be in front of all of these people and subject yourself, you're like, it's that idea that you're automatically subjecting yourself to all of the opinions and you know, that means everything. And that's not necessarily the case. Like, I know back in the day, like, you would throw tomatoes at people that you don't like. And it's like, now it's just, you know, it's Twitter. It's not tomatoes. It's like, and it's actual, you know, like, hurtful comments.
You know, I was going to say, I always tell my daughter this too. Like, I did the movie, The Last American Virgin in 1981. We did it. So in 82, it came out. Okay. And I play, of course, a girl named Karen. very perfect name. And I play this girl who you think is going to fall in love with this guy. And at the end, you know, I just don't go with him. And he breaks out into tears. And it's like an ending where everybody hates me. So when that movie first came out, you know, I didn't understand that people actually took it as reality. Like, they thought I picked this, you know, I was the heel, I was the bad girl. And I never saw that, because I never saw myself as that. So I was like, well, no, I played a part. It's not me. But people took it so seriously. And I always said to my daughter, you know, for every person that says something good about you, someone's going to say something bad. And that's just it. And that's just life. And that's not, it's not a personal thing. It's the way they're coping with their feelings, you know, and they maybe take things more seriously because it hits them. Maybe it's hitting something in them that, you know, something real, you know. So
can I say that I respect that you used the word heel. The wrestling lingo is very appreciated.
Thank you.
I picked that up and I was like, oh yeah, mark it out right now.
wrestling is fun. It's very cool.
I'm not trying to compete with Jimmy here, but not only am I a Bill and Ted fan, I'm a huge fan of Amityville 2.
Ooh! Amityville 2. I was 20 years old when I did that film. For those of you who have watched that film, a lot of people, they get a little nervous when they see me because I'm looking like I'm, oh my gosh, I saw the film a couple of years ago and I thought, wow, I look young. I look like I'm 14, you know? But it's okay. I was 20. It's all good. And I'm glad you like that film. You know, that I've been told that people think it's the best one out of the series. So that makes me happy.
It definitely is. It was far better than the first one. You crushed Meg Ryan's movie.
Thank you. I, you know, The interesting part about Amityville is it has followed me throughout my life in a very unexpected way. Because, first of all, I'm from Long Island originally. I'm from Plainview, Long Island, which is a couple of towns away from Amityville. And when I auditioned for the part, I got the script. I was in New York. And so I auditioned in New York. And then we never shot the film in Amityville. We shot the outside exterior scenes in Toms River. And then we shot the interior in Mexico. Look how weird this is. How weird is my life?
That's wild.
You know, I was like, wait, English castle, go to Rome, inside Amityville house, we're in Mexico, right? It's just so weird. So I did the film there, and films took much longer to make. I think we were working on that film for like 3 months, as far as I can remember. And then it came out the same year as Last American Virgin. It came out fast. So all of a sudden I was in films at a time where that, you know, it wasn't as off. Like now today you see people in a couple of films coming out at the same time and it's pretty normal, I guess. But then it was not. So it really stood out. The people were going, wait, is that girl the same girl as that girl? You know? And The weird thing about Amityville following me is, so then afterwards they did the other Amityville with Lori Loughlin and the other girl you just mentioned?
Meg Ryan.
Meg Ryan, yeah. And they did Meg Ryan. She came and, you know, again, like we were all up and coming, you know, the names were coming, you know, we were slowly working our way, making our names for ourselves, all these actresses. And then I wound up, then like it came out and then I thought when it came out, I thought, well, who's going to watch part two? Because when you go to the movie theater, if you're going to choose between one and two, you're obviously going to see the first one. But then VHS came out and that was when everything exploded and people could see whatever they wanted over and over again. So my career extended and that was a gift because that just doesn't, you know, you just don't know when you do something if it's going to live or die. So then obviously the internet continued and there was a guy whose name was Daniel Ferens and he saw Amityville when he was a kid, Amityville the Possession, and it scared the heck out of him. And so he came to me and said, I want to do a movie. I want to do Amityville Murders, but I want you to play Louise DeFeo. I want you to play the mom now. So it was the same story, but this time I'm playing the mom instead of the daughter, which is freaking brilliant. Like I was like, I want to play this part so badly. Like I burst into tears when he told me. I was like, yes. I mean, I'm actually, plus Louise DeFeo is the woman who unfortunately died. And so what an honor it is to play someone, you know, who went through this. And I just played with my heart. I mean, it was a real old gift to be able to do that. So if that's not enough Amityville, so that Amityville, that came out in like 2000, I think 17 or 18. And I play the mom and that's really cool. I'm waiting for somebody to do like a mashup of those two, which is kind of fun. Then Amityville Origin contacted me and they said, well, we'd like to interview you for the documentary that is about Amityville. So I was like, okay, fine. I'll do that. So now that's on some, I think that's on now on not Paramount Plus, but could be like on Hulu or something like that. So it's called Amityville Origins. And they talk about the actual murders and they talk about the hauntings and what happened. And when I did Amityville Possession, I had to play this really innocent girl. And I deflected any kind of strange, weird energy. But when I played the mother in 2017, weird things happened. So it is, I think it's just kind of as an actor, you're very vulnerable and you feel things deeply. And your character can pick up energy maybe that, you know, if you're a certain character that deflects everything, you know, then you don't feel it. So it was just an interesting experience. Oh, and there's one more thing. I guess there's an Amityville book coming out and it hasn't come out yet, but I know someone made it. So I think it's called Get Out. So anyway, Amityville is surviving, I guess. I don't know. You tell me.
Would you do another one?
I would. I was funny. I told Daniel Ferrance, I said, if you ever do one in like years from now, I'll play the grandmother. But I do have a really good horror film out right now, and it's on Tubi, and it's called Waking Nightmare. And the role I have is unbelievable. Like, I'm going to tell you that, you know, as an actor, you're only as good as the writing and the role you're given, because you could do so much, but if that role, but if it's not in the part and it's not written in, you have nothing to show. Well, in this particular movie, Waking Nightmare, it's about my daughter who commits murders in her sleep. She sleepwalks and murders people. And my character does a, like, the transition of where I start, from where I start to where I end is a big surprise. So people have, the reviews have been like, you know, you got to go see Diane Franklin in this. Like, it's like a great performance. So if you like horror, because this is indie horror, it's not like, it's like really grainy and funky and like, it's weird, but it is, you're going to be really, I won't let you down. Let's put it that way.
I'm checking out the IMDb, and like the stills from it just look like that late 80s, like the lighting of it. I'm like,
yeah,
this looks very interesting. This looks really good, actually. I will absolutely check this
out. It's really good. And it's, I know that when I got that role, I was very excited because I saw what I could do with it. And I just was thinking, you guys have no idea. Like, I'm going to bring it. It's going to be really cool. So that film is now out. But I have other projects I did. So those are coming up next year. And also, so a lot, I guess it's not just horror, some comedy too. But I've done a bunch of little different things recently. So we'll see.
Sticking with the horror thing for another minute. Terror Vision.
I'm going to make you take your pills, like that kind of a character. Oh my gosh, Susie Putterman. That was such a wonderful part to get, because if you looked at me, I had just finished Better Off Dead, basically, when I got the audition for that. And my hair was really short and curly, and I did not look like a punk rocker at all. But I always wanted to play one. I always thought that it would be really fun to play someone who was sarcastic and who was intelligent and who was creative. And, you know, that Susie Putterman is more of a, I think in a certain way, more identifiable with people today, girls today, than maybe Karen from The Last American Virgin, or even Patricia, because a lot of kids are, although, I mean, there are quiet kids. I mean, in every generation, there are kids that are passive and quiet, and they have to grow up and learn. Susie Putterman is the voice of, she's intelligent, she's competitive, she's funny, and it was just sarcastic. I just loved the ability to play somebody like her that you would not normally hire me for. You know, there'd be other girls who maybe would have more of an edge than me. But it was a great character, and we just created it out of nothing. I came up with the voice and the attitude, and it came at, the lines just brought that out. Ted Nicolai, the writer director, by the way, Savage Steve Holland, writer director, Boaz Davidson, writer director. Love working with people who write their own material and then direct it, because they see the vision. And that's not always an option for studios. You know, like the studios have a director, then they have separate, the writer or writers are separate. So it is a real advantage to a film when the writer gets to direct their own material. But you know, that personality is hard. Writers can be very shy. Directors have to be very outspoken and problem solvers. So you have to have a personality that can bring those two things together. You know, I don't know. Have you guys made films yourselves?
Mike has.
Yes. Yeah.
So you know what I mean. I mean, you're probably writing and directing your stuff.
I started as a producer, but yeah, I do write and direct stuff. So actually, I was going to ask if you had done any other Charles Band productions, because that's how I got my start, was working for Charles Band.
Oh, wow. You got your start with Charles Band?
Yes. Yeah.
Oh, wow. You know, I never did another Charles Band film. And it is interesting. I only did one Canon film, one Charles Band film. But somebody tried to do a documentary on Charles Band, and it never came out. I don't know what happened. Celluloid Wizards, I think it was called, or something, years ago. But no, I never wound up working again for his company.
Yeah, I didn't think so. That was the only one, because that was still Empire.
That was, yes, Empire Films. Full Moon. Oh my gosh, you're bringing back memories. It was great. And we shot entirely that film, get ready, in Rome.
Man, again, you're in Rome.
No reason. There's no reason. Nothing takes place in Rome, except that, you know, obviously in the 80s, it was much cheaper to shoot other places. I shot a movie in New Zealand because it was cheaper for them to bring the actors there and use the crew there than it was to shoot, you know, in the U.S. And it's interesting for me because I've traveled a lot in my life with my career, but I know a lot of actresses who never left the States because they were very all American looking, and I had like darker hair. So I don't know, or maybe that was more, and maybe I had a more indie look. I don't know, but
you definitely look British in Bill and Ted.
Oh,
I believed you were British for years.
Oh, I'm great. Did you actually think I was English or was British?
Oh yeah. What I was going to ask you was, do you keep in touch with Keanu Reeves?
Keanu is not answering any of my messages. I don't know why. No, Keanu. I think it's just that Keanu is in a whole other, you know, world. He's just he's like a different stratosphere. Well, you know,
the reason I was going to ask is because at that age, your accent was so much better British than his in Dracula. I was going to say, did you take any credit for, like, if I was friendly with him, I would have called him and been like, yo, Point Break.
Dude,
this was my accent was way better than yours in Dracula.
Well, you know, I'm glad you, I mean, it's just interesting. First of all, you know, I think like, that's another thing. Like, I personally, I've been always trained to, like, you have to try to get as close you can to trying to make the voice sound like the character. That's right. It's a head, and it's part of what I enjoy. And sometimes actors, and it's not just Keanu, but there's a lot of actors who maybe have the look or the popularity, but they're not taken care of to do that. Like, they're not.
So the actor
might be too shy to bring it up, and the people who around them might be too yes men. So they don't get to improve their craft. You know what I mean?
And that's why. See, I have this debate with people all the time. I respect him immensely for even trying that movie, because if he ever listens to this for whatever reason, I love Keanu Reeves. I'm a huge fan.
No, we all adore him. He's great.
But I respect him for trying to do it. Even though, honestly, at that point in his career, he didn't have to try that. Like, he could have just done the movie with his regular voice, and it would have been fine, and it would have been just as successful. But because he wanted to, he was trying, like you said, he's trying to hone his craft. He's trying to do something out of the box and different. And that was when he was doing the one where is it Walk in the Clouds or something like that? He did some weird movie where he was like he was like a farmer. There was that one, and then he did. He did a bunch of movies that were just not typical Keanu Reeves. And then he went back and did Johnny Mnemonic. And it was even that was like a little bit different than what he normally does. But it's like you can constantly see him trying to expand his horizon as an actor. And that's why I think he's revered, and he should be. But I also think he's underrated for what he tries to do.
I give him credit for doing Face the Music.
Oh yeah, because absolutely.
So okay, and then you look at this. There's a lot of actors. Okay, so you know, people try to groom a lot of the actors to be leading men. You know, and they'll do a film and they'll do a film. And if a film fails and their reputation goes with that, then they're always looking for that material to bring them up. Maybe to get it. Maybe they want to get an Oscar. I don't know. You know, they're always trying to push it, right? But with Keanu, what I really liked was his ability to, when he did Face the Music, I thought, okay, well, first of all, that film to me was bringing guys, like saying older guys can have movies, which is, you might think, well, yeah, older guys do have movies and they're the center of it, but not like that. Like, they, you know, that movie really tried to say, listen, we can have those stars carry the movie again, you know, as older men. And I think that is, that was like the name of the game for that film. But I give him a lot of credit for doing that, because he could have been like, well, I'm, you know, I'm beyond that. I don't need to do that. But I think it shows how close he is with Alex, and maybe his relationship with Ed Solomon and Chris Mathis.
Could,
I think
you could,
yeah.
you could see the love even in his performance. I cried. It made me cry at the end of the movie, because it was just so,
yes!
It well, was so satisfying as an ending yeah. for the characters, but also you could see, like, and I'm not going out on a limb. I'm not saying, oh, it's Oscar worthy. It's the greatest
movie.
Yeah,
no.
It was the third Bill and Ted movie, but it was like,
yeah.
As like a fan.
Well, you know, Oscar winning films are about the message, and like the Oscar winning films are about like maybe changing the way the world sees things. But that film hit the heart.
It was so beautiful. The whole thing was beautiful.
I think it was important. And it happened during COVID, which we really needed badly. We needed comedies during COVID.
I remember I watched when it first came out. I watched, they did a panel that there was, and it's probably still online, but Kevin Smith ran a panel about it with Keanu and Alex, and he cried when he was talking about it, because it was such an important movie to him as a kid. And it was just like, when you see the movie, the ending is just so satisfying. You're just like, oh my God, that's so cathartic to see these characters actually accomplish like what they wanted to accomplish. I hope I'm not ruining the movie for everybody, but like they accomplished the goal, and you're just, but they accomplished the goal, and you're just like, God, like you can achieve what you're supposed to achieve. Like it's there. You just have to
know
where it is.
And you know what? That is not a given. Every generation has to hear that, you know?
Adults
have to hear that. I always think like a lot of times when there are movies, there's so many movies about getting kids to believe in themselves and move forward and step forward and be brave. But really, oh my gosh, adults need it too. They really do, you know? It is a tough world out there. Everything has been turned upside down. There is nothing that is the norm anymore. And so I think, you know, people just, for me now, I think it's just important for everybody to come together, and film and television and these shows bond people together, and we learn so much. And hopefully the writing will just stay, so we can help people with the writing. It was, like, good writing, I always feel, is like when you walk away and then you have something to think about, like you go, and it's how you feel too. Obviously you leave the movie and how it makes you feel. But then a couple of days later, you think about it, you know?
Yeah, that was an emotional time for me too, because when that came out was the first time that I had seen Rocky VI. And that also has a really great message. And it's almost the same kind of message as you're talking about. It's like, you can be who you were or who you want to be, no matter what age you are, no matter who tells you that you can't do it. Like the more you let people bring you down, the less you're going to accomplish it. And it's like both of those movies were like, we're just like, even with Bill and Ted, and not, you know, not to get, you know, super, super philosophic, but like, they're still trying in the beginning of the movie to figure out the song that's going to save the world. And they never stopped. Like the entire time between the movies, they're continually trying. And then it's like, but there was so much heart from all the characters. Like you could tell that they weren't, like a lot of times those movies, like if you look at the new Indiana Jones movies, like you could tell that some of the actors don't want to be there. They're just doing it to get a paycheck.
Okay. I have to talk to you about this. Okay. This is so wrong, because if that's the point I'm trying to make, like if you're in a movie and you don't want to be in it, everybody can feel it. Like that's just not cool. And I will say this, when they were trying to do Bill and Ted's Face the Music, you know, Kimberly and I really wanted to be in it. We would have flown out on our own dime. We told them, we'll come out, because we knew that the audience would be, I mean, aside from anything that they wanted us to do, they would have been so excited to say, oh, wow, we remember them. Like, it's like by not taking the past with you, you're kind of insulting the past. It's like, oh, we're better than that, or we're bigger. Like, I don't know. Like, that's my thought. But when you're saying that with Indiana Jones, it's like, you can't do that. Just don't do the movie then. It's not okay to be, you're hurting, the audience can feel it.
Yeah.
100%. And you know what? It's like, that's bullshit. So
yeah. There you go. I couldn't find. No, you're right. And it's, really? And that's, but it's like you said, I think that more people need to, like, there's a lot of talk right now about the overwhelming, like, nostalgia porn, where it's like people are just doing movies just doing movies because they made money before. But like, yes. I watched the new Ghostbusters Afterlife. This was another one. I watched it and it's like, uh-huh. You could feel all the actors were really excited to be a part of Ghostbusters new. And it's like, it may not be the greatest movie that ever came out, but it's like the passion that you feel from these characters being these characters. Like, right. That's another one I cried at. I cried at all three. Maybe they, I'm just super emotional, yep. And I need a therapist, but like, I cried at all of them. And I'm like, because you never cried at any. I never cried any of your movies, Mike. I'm sorry.
No, but you see that you're catching the important part is that the feeling. It's not just an intellectual thought when we watch something. It's the emotion we feel. And who has the right to tell you what you should be feeling when you watch something? That is a personal, your personal experience, you know, and how it hits you. I mean, people watch Last American Virgin and they burst into tears because that happened to them. You know, or they're really mad because it happened to them. But you just said, oh, I know what it is. This is the thing I would say. You know, and you're talking about like when you watch a movie and the movie says, believe in yourself. And like they went and they finished that song and they went after it. They didn't give up. That feeling is why in life, you know, there's a time in life where you must maybe give up what you want to help others. Maybe whether it's raise your family or maybe it's, you know, give your mom money or for whatever it is, or help a friend or, you know, or in relationship, you know, you can't make end meet. So you give up maybe what you want to do for a while so that you can do that. But the truth is, you know, you don't have to give it up forever. It's just a portion. It's just a time period. It's like a lot of times people go, well, that's it. I'll never do it again. And it's like, you're making that decision. You can always go back and you can always, I never thought I was going to keep acting. And then I just sort of opened myself up to it and said, well, you know, do people even want to see me? You know, I was helping my daughter with her stuff and she needed an actress and she needed a mom, she needed a grandmother. I was like, okay, fine, I'll play it. You know, but it was because it just sort of, you open yourself up and you allow good energy to come to you. You allow it. If you squash it, how can anything be good? And why do we give other people the right and the power over our own life in a sense? You know what I'm saying? Why do we let other people's opinions matter more than our own desire to do something? That is the biggest problem with sadness in society. Because at some point we went to somebody else and said, should we do this? And they said, no. And we said, okay. It's like, no.
Well, but
it's okay, but you can still say yes.
I think you're being a little too lighthearted about it too. I think it's not just that people were like, should I do this? No. People were like, what did you think? And they were like, that sucked, whether it was good or not. And it's like some things, one of my favorite quotes is Kurt Vonnegut. And because he's my,
I love Kurt Vonnegut.
He's my favorite author, but my favorite quote is when he says to just continue to make things, make shitty music, make terrible songs, make bad poetry, make terrible writings.
I don't like you're looking at me.
I'm just leaning to the side.
Awful. make
some crap. No, you got it. Well, how are you ever going to get better unless you do it?
Yeah.
Even if you do, let's say, I mean, here's a crazy thing. Let's say you make a masterpiece, a piece that's incredible. What are you going to do next? You see, it's like if you reach the top right away, you have problems too. So don't go thinking it's easy. People who get Oscars are in trouble because now they have to top their other thing that they did.
It's a huge expectation.
Well, they don't have to, but they're expected to, is what you're saying.
In their mind, they get nervous. They're thinking,
you
know,
you can't just be happy with an Oscar. You
gotta be level-headed, you know? But you know, it's true. You gotta take the pressure off yourself and you gotta bring it back to what do I enjoy about this and bringing it to the work? That's what, like, for me, I love interesting characters. And so, as an example, I did a couple of movie roles. One is I play you're going to like this, a French woman in the movie. It's called Vampire. Think Bambi and a vampire together.
Oh my God.
Coming out in October. That's going to
so
be very
good.
Exciting.
I can't wait
for this movie. Yes, I did a TV series called Riding with Pride. And that one is, I play a horse a wrangler. Like I'm a woman who's on, who has a daughter and I'm advising her, and I'm sort of like it's like a horse series, and I'm like involved with her as a mom. And then my latest one, get ready for this, I play a female Vincent Price.
Yes,
that's amazing.
So cool, like so fun. Like these characters are, they're all different, and people haven't seen me in them as, you know, before. So that's where I kind of go. And I don't know if you guys know that I did this episode of Prank Encounters. Have you ever seen it with Johnny Knoxville and Eric Andre?
No.
Oh God, I heard about it. I've never had a chance to see the show yet. It's on my list. It's absolutely on my list.
It's we did this episode probably like 20 episodes in. Okay, my daughter got hired to do it, and then Johnny Knoxville heard that I was Olivia's, my daughter's mom, and she needed a mom, so she's like, we could bring Diane in to play that character, and then my husband's in it too, which was just because she needed parents. But the episode is, I guess they liked it so much, it became it. They took this episode that was in the middle of shooting the whole series and made it the pilot episode. So if you look it up, it's called, don't forget this, it's called either Family Matters or, get ready, Incest Wedding.
That harkens back to the Amityville movie.
I know. I'm like, why? What's with me and the incest? What is it? So the idea is they're pranking the minister, and my daughter is marrying her brother. And I flip out. It's like a whole thing. It's hilarious. So
that's awesome. I'm definitely.
But like, I mean,
out.
Even that's so different from any other parts I've played. So.
Was there any kind of hangover because you did Bill and Ted, and then you did Last American Version, and then Better Off Dead, or maybe the sequence is different, but those three movies were like pretty like awesome, like high, you know what I mean? Was there like a hangover after that where it was like you were just saying like, I have to compete with these three movies that I made like early in my career, or was there not?
I think that's really nice of you to say, because those movies, like, again, at the time, they were very like solid movies, but we didn't know how popular they'd become. And again, like years later, like I didn't know people. I mean, all the movies I've done, I'm very surprised. Like I'm just still really surprised that people are still passing them on to people they know. And I mean, Amityville Part 2, like, I mean, that's such an obscure, weird thing, but people keep passing it on to other people, and it's still on the internet. People like it. And I just, I didn't know that they were going to be talked about today and, you know, still popular. So I feel very fortunate about that. But I think that for me, those movies, I've played a lot of different things, but there've been areas that I haven't. So I always felt like there was still stuff to do. Like I never did sci-fi, really. I did an episode of, Alfred Hitchcock Presents, which I played like a futuristic secretary and then robot person. But like, it would have been great to do a Star Wars or a Star Trek, you know, like be part of that world. Or even it would be great to have been on like now today, like Cobra Kai
any of the Marvel movies.
Yeah. Or the Marvel movies. Yeah. I mean, certainly, I mean, I don't know if, you know, where that can go. But I do think that I still have a lot to offer. And I think that I just enjoy it so much. And I would love to do an action movie, you know, like, I mean, so there's still things that I still would like to do that I haven't reached the pinnacle yet. But I have done, I do have an interesting story. I did this movie, a short film. I usually don't do shorts, but it's called Pareidolia. And no one's ever done a movie about this subject matter that is a horror film. Pareidolia is like when you look at a tree or a cloud and you see a face in it, okay. And you like an image. So somebody, had an idea. It was this Aiden Truss, who's a writer, and his son Aaron Truss came up with this idea, and a gentleman from England named Stuart Morris produced it, and he asked me to come out there and shoot the film, and it has now won me so far 2 Best Actress awards.
Oh my God.
I'm like, what is happening? Oh my gosh. So that's very exciting because I never won awards. My whole career was not about trying to attain awards, but it's interesting with these short films, you can put a lot into it and it gets some acknowledgement. And I'm very happy about that because that's like a kind of a new thing that's happened.
We're working on the Brutal Dudes Christmas special that we're going to make that I'm currently writing. So that's our short film.
Is it a comedy?
Kind of, yeah. It's comedy, action, sci-fi. Santa Claus is in it.
Horror or no?
There'll be elements of horror. It's kind of a delve into all 3 of our personalities. I'm trying to capture a little bit of each, but yeah.
That's the only scene I really have, actually. I like the fact that it delves into all of your personalities.
The only thing I really have planned is that I'm gonna have a huge fight with a bunch of ninjas dressed as pilgrims and turkeys in a wrestling ring. Because I've always wanted to do that.
you know, that's your bucket list.